Hello, everyone.
I'm joining today from a different account, but it's Val. To everyone who usually listens to us, I've decided to join from the Women's March in Ukraine account to have this conversation with Maxim and Olena. But it's Val as per usual.
That's another beautiful, fantastic side to Valeria, that she's also part of the, you know, part of the group of women who launched this March of Women, which has been increasingly popular and a massive event before the pandemic. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it restarted last year or this year. Last year, wasn't it right?
Yeah, Lena, we've been doing it for a couple of years. I only joined for last year, but Olena's been doing it since 2018 every year. I think so.
Yeah.
Yes, we started to do it in 2018 as a massive event.
Yeah, and how many people joined the first time after the pandemic you did? How many people marched?
Well, on the 2018, it was 2,000 something of people. Uh-huh. Yeah, but the next year it was more like 3,500. And then we ended last year with almost 5,000 of people. So this year, of course, we expected it will be more, but unfortunately, the war started.
Look, everyone, before I introduce our featured Ukrainian, and she's already joined us, I wanted to send thanks to everyone who's joining. And for the first, for those people who are joining for the first time, I'm going to remind a quick bit what Ukrainian Spaces stand for. So this is something that we, together with Valeria, created to amplify Ukrainian voices and decolonize Ukraine conversations on Twitter. We do it, you know, 2-3 times a week around 5 p.m. every evening or so. We decided to do it because we see millions of Ukrainians with perfect English sharing their stories across all social media platforms since this genocide started. However, the conversations about Ukraine are still dominated by Western, mostly white and mostly male folks. And not only it continuously robs Ukrainians of their agency, but it also perpetuates outdated, misleading, and false narratives about Ukraine and Ukrainians. So instead, we want to foster a relaxed, safe, and chill space for Ukrainian voices to express themselves without the need of fitting Western boxes. And the rest can use the space to educate themselves and maybe decolonize your views of Ukrainians a bit. Valeria, do you want to tell everyone why we decided to focus on Marsh Zhinok and Ukrainian women this week?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, the work and activism that Olena and Marsh Zhinok have been doing has been absolutely crucial in sort of the development of you know, women's rights in Ukraine in the past couple of years, as we said, since 2018 and moving forward. But I think what's been really important is that we realize that, you know, a lot of the attention right now around the war has been really focused around stories of sexual violence and, you know, the agency of women and sort of the stories of brave Ukrainian women have been highlighted, but maybe not as much as you know, the stories of everything else that's been happening. And a lot of the conversations have been very operational up until now, you know, just the reporting. And I think now it's really important to look at what's been happening with women in particular during the war in Ukraine.
You know, I these days, I mean, of course, there are so many stories that we hear about the constant rape that thousands of Ukrainian women, but also men, experience from Russian invaders every day. And of course, it's extremely triggering for everyone else. But it's also, you know, I always kind of reminded of that picture that I saw about Ukrainian female soldiers that were released in exchange of war prisoners by Russia. And the stories that they told about how Russians humiliated them, they shaved them, you know, they tortured them. Because this is something that for me became quite apparent in recent days, that this is not only, Russia invading Ukraine, but it's also a standoff between some civilizational choices. And for Ukraine, the Ukrainian woman has always been one of the central points in the family, where we have so many kick-ass Ukrainian women running Ukrainian civil society, running Ukrainian journalism, for example. And when you compare to Russia, that it stands for this colonial patriarchy, of course they hate, a side of Ukrainian women fighting against this invasion, right? And compared that, also Ukrainian army now has the largest probably proportion of women serving on active duty.
100%. So maybe we can jump in straight away and ask, start with a question to Olena in regards to some of the things that you've been describing. Obviously, war affects different people in different ways. And I can't believe that we went from organizing a celebratory yet, kind of activism-based march to now talking about this. But Olena, I guess our first question is, how have women been affected by war differently to men? And sort of what are some of the stories that you've been seeing and hearing that really highlight the experiences of women right now?
Valeria, can I ask also Olena, one of our, classic thing is for Olena to introduce herself.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Olena Shevchenko, and I'm a founder of March Zhinok in Ukraine. And that's the biggest feminist event so far. And Valeria also mentioned that, of course, for myself personally, for all the feminist community, let's be honest, it was a huge issue that we didn't manage to get, this March Zhinok this year into the force, because what we expected that it will be the last point in our advocacy and informational campaign to ratificate Istanbul Convention against domestic violence in Ukraine. But now, of course, that's not the main priority for us, and we totally reverse ourselves into humanitarian aid to support women, especially those who are from the most marginalized communities, like women with children, women who are still under occupation because they are taking care about the most vulnerable ones, people with disabilities, children with disabilities, pets, older people, elderly people. You can't even imagine how many stories each day I read in different chats than those women just asking us for any support which we can provide. They don't have access to food. They can't buy something in those cities. They asking for a relocation, possible shelters in Western Ukraine or abroad. They asking for at least some money to survive in those occupied territories and under bombing. So from my point of view, the main issues which is still lack in Ukraine is the visibility about this situation of different women, because women, it's not the general population, of course. We see many women in their military now. We see many women in the volunteers groups, like us, for instance. But there are so many other issues which is not covered in media. And of course, we are trying somehow to put this attention to show people that so many stories are there, that women are not just like victims. We don't have to just show people those victimization. We need to show people the strength of Ukrainian women which are trying to somehow survive, or which are trying to defend the country, which are trying just to defend their families. Like, they all equal on this ground. And unfortunately, yes, the resources are so limited. And unfortunately, many of other international communities don't pay attention to those women who are trying just, to somehow support their families or, for instance, coming to Western Ukraine, trying to seek for shelter. They don't have any access to separate spaces, which they obviously need, because they are coming not alone. They are coming with small children. They can't just live in this, you know, shared tent without any access to shower, to hygiene or medicines, and so far and so on. And of course, another issue is also that we experience here in Ukraine in terms of the needs, that they are so like humanitarian aid, which is sent to Ukraine, it is pretty general. It's not based on the personal requests from the most marginalized communities. So this is also an issue.
Yeah, for example, can you elaborate on that? Because this is, I think, extremely important. When we ask for humanitarian help, how that help could be better or more specialized when it comes to women, but also some other marginalized groups that we're trying to help here?
That's what I've been saying. Like, we need to base this humanitarian support not on these traditional ways of delivering things to different countries. Because what I see, what I observe during this more than the months, that it just copy-paste from other wars or conflicts from other countries. Like, people sending everything they can find in their homes. But for instance, we don't need dresses for women. We need medicines, we need pampers, we need hygiene, we need medicines, we need hormonal treatments. And, you know, all those general things, or for instance, like in some humanitarian convoy, we saw like people just trying to send bread and water. That's not something which is now needed in Ukraine.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And we had, by the way, folks, do check out, we had an episode with Timofey Milovanov, who was also, telling as straight as it possible about the failures of humanitarian aid to Ukraine and why it's such a mess and why we get so much stuff that we actually don't need instead of getting stuff that we're actually asking for but never get. And Olena, I also wanted to ask you about a question, because the first time I met you was actually during the Maidan Revolution. And a lot of folks may not realize that Olena was also one of those, you know, absolutely fantastically brave people who were on the Maidan Square from the day first. And she helped to put together and lead this group of kick-ass women that, you know, fought on the Maidan Square, shoulder to shoulder with everyone else, defending Ukrainian democracy. I wanted to ask you, because we had so many conversations about, you know, back then, 8 years ago, where Ukrainian women stand and how the revolution might change that or affect that. Do you see, I know it's a bit of a perspective question, but do you see if things have changed since then when it comes to perception of Ukrainian woman, where she stands, where the society sees her? Because, you know, I think you're the best person to ask about it, considering these last 8 years.
Well, of course, it changed significantly from that time, because our one of our main aims was just to show to other society, like to general society, that women are there on the Euromaidan fighting for the independence on the equal basis with men. And so the message to our society was that we don't have to see women only as a traditional take cares of the families. Like, we are not just there to cook. We are not just there to support heroes, like they said from the beginning. We are those heroes. So women are those heroes who are fighting for independence. And fighting means on different ways, not only, you know, on the barricades and with the weapon, but also with many other things which are still underestimated. Then we are talking about, you know, value of the things. So basically, yes, I guess that we changed the perception. So now our society already expect that women will be everywhere, and it's not a huge surprise anymore. So basically, yes, 8 years we spent on this changing of the public attitude, and we succeeded. So we are not anymore like, you know, we are not similar to Russia. We are the fighters, and among those fighters, the half, at least the half, and maybe even more, are women.
Yeah. And the way, for example, the President Zelensky also talks, which is something that was really telling for me, when he talks and delivers these everyday addresses to Ukraine, he always uses feminatives as well, you know, saying, you know, our fighters, and he says fighters in male form and fighters in female form, which I feel a huge, maybe symbolic, but a huge change since in the last 8 years, right?
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's like, we're not a support function, you know, for the men in the country. We're actually the leading function in a lot of these ways that Olena has been describing. And I think that's super important for everyone to just always also keep in mind if they're reporting or talking about Ukraine. Of course, we have to highlight different stories. And I know that there's horrific stuff happening all across Ukraine that is related to women. But it's also important to remember that, you know, there is agency in us and in what we do, and we are impactful in supporting Ukraine and in fighting for our freedom, as Olena said. But my question, my next question, I guess, would be, we ask this question, by the way, Olena, to everyone who comes, and it's a little bit about media coverage. And I know we've briefly spoken about this before, so I'd be interested to hear as well what you have to say now. But of course, you know, the war in Ukraine has got so much attention from so many people, from so many media outlets. And our question is always, what annoys you about sort of Western media coverage right now? And I guess in our conversation in relation to women and gender and, you know, from a feminist perspective, and what would you sort of ask people to cover more or talk about more if it were up to you?
Well, I can say that I'm quite experienced now in this communication with different journalists from different countries, and it annoys me pretty much, honestly. Because from the one hand, of course, I understand the importance of, you know, visibility of all those stories which needs to be written and go to different communities, different countries. But the approach itself, it's not pretty accurate. It's not pretty sensibilized, especially towards the most marginalized ones, and especially in the situation of the violence. So I have top two, to be honest, I mean, with the minus. So the first thing from the first days of the war, it was the request to give to different journalists the story of the trans women who can't cross the border. And why it's so annoying? Because it's it was so dehumanization approach from them. Like, they call you every day 6-7 times and asking, keep asking, like, can we come? Do you have another person to talk to? We need to, you know, to finish the story till the 6th of these days. And then you just spend the whole day with them because they asking you to translate. They ask very bad questions. They don't have interpreters. And then keep asking, like, do you have another bunch of trans people who are coming and we can talk with them? And no. The same, also this, also almost the same thing started a few weeks ago with the sexual violence and rapes. So people did the same. They just call you, sending messages in all possible, you know, social networks and messengers. Keep asking the same thing, like, we need the story of the raped woman. And this is like, you know, it even sounds very bad. Like all those women who survived during the rapes, they are so, you know, in such bad conditions now. They are not pretty ready to give all those details and stories to the journalist. Personally, I think that such stories need to be written in a different way. From my point of view, it should be some analysis and the articles. You can speak to activists. You can talk to other people who are dealing on the regular basis with rapes, with psychologists. And then, you know, just don't push those people. Don't try to, you know, get to this intimacy because they are not ready to talk about that, especially in a such way. It's even, you know, for those requests which they keep saying, like, it will be anonymously, it will be without any face, but still in the process, then they ask those questions. That's pretty bad. And yeah, especially the thing which annoyed me so much, few days ago, then I read the post on the social network, which was shared by different media of our ombudsperson, who put very bad details of the rape about different persons. Personally, I don't think it should be there, because we are not the porn hub, and it should be, you know, removed immediately.
Yeah. And it's so unnecessary, right? It doesn't, some, like, there's some things that just should not be shared because it doesn't add anything and just further, basically, I don't know, you know, we live in a society that stigmatizes these things, unfortunately, as much as we don't want to, but it just is, or even like, I also find not just like descriptions of, you know, what happened, but also descriptions of the person. It's so unnecessary to describe how the person looks, how, you know, how the person talks, or these kind of, it's almost like, I know why people are doing it, to give like a face to a story, to make people relate to it better. But it just feels like it's just almost, I don't want to say this, but it's almost like it's moving into the direction of, I don't know, who is and isn't allowed to be a survivor of horrible events like this. So just for everyone, from Marginok account, we did a thread in English, on some things to keep in mind when you're reporting about sexual violence. So check it out. It's on our account. I'll pin it to the top as well after this. Yeah.
I also shared that post by Ukrainian ombudswoman. And to be honest, it was a bit a struggle to figure out whether I should share or not, because, you know, I'm also was very public that I'm a rape survivor, and such things kind of, you know, are very triggering. On the other hand, as a journalist, I was also weighing in whether those stories have to be told. So, you know, we share as much as possible when it comes to the war crimes done by Russia, and rape is a war crime. On the other hand, yeah, I totally, you know, kind of see the perspective with, you know, more and more stories coming my way. That's actually something I wanted to also ask you, because, I mean, you're a prominent person not only when it comes to feminism, but also queer activism in Ukraine. You're a legendary name. But don't you think sometimes for a queer person, I also feel like this is the same story over and over and over again when it comes to media, foreign media coverage of Ukraine, where a lot of pursuit of reporters goes into finding this victim narrative. And once the victim narrative is not there, whether it's, you know, queer people that got assaulted, women, Ukrainian women got raped, then it seems like almost the story and the interest is also not there. How do you feel, like, why this is happening? Is this Western colonial gaze thing?
I'm agree. I'm agree. And this is something I think which needs to be changed. This is classic approach, yeah, to give the story, because journalists, it seems to me, still thinks that it need to be some parts of the scandal in the story. to make it interesting. You know, in Ukraine, it's even worse than it comes to different traditional media. So they still work with the same approach. And I think that our communities, like the human rights approach, needs to also be there, trying to somehow change the story. So, for instance, after the first round of this, you know, trying to find the scandal stories with trans women who can't cross the border, I wrote to different organizations who are dealing with media with the request. So I said to them, like, this is not appropriate way to do it. We need to cover many issues about LGBTQI, not only this one, which is like, you know, showed it in the scandalic way that Ukraine don't have a permission to leave the country to trans women without changed documents. So I honestly still don't see any coverage of any other things. And especially I was disappointed because you can imagine that, like, they are coming, I mean, journalists, they are coming here to shelter and also to this center where we did the sorting and, you know, sending different things to other cities and occupied cities, to women, to LGBTQI people. And then they talk only about, you know, this interesting aspect. They never asked me or my colleagues, who are also internally displaced persons who are working here 24/7, they never asked us about our stories. It is not interesting for them.
Yeah, as if you're just like serving some function, that's it.
Or like even, you know, get me a woman who has experienced this and find me this, find me that. But actually, instead of like giving us and yourselves agency, you know, for people who are doing stuff on the ground, it's sometimes a little bit disheartening in those moments. I wanted to ask you another question. And I know that we said we need to talk about more things than just the sexual violence that has been happening. But obviously, these stories have gained attention, so we might as well present our point of view as Ukrainians on what to do and why they happen. And I wanted to, I know you wrote a really good Twitter thread as well that we posted earlier around sort of, you know, that we've seen widespread attention given to crimes of rape and sexual violence in Ukraine right now. But why is rape by soldiers so widespread during war? And you've spoken about sort of the background to why it happens. And I was wondering if you wanted to also share some of that today.
Well, it's, you know, it is the interesting situation. And I think that's the same in all countries during the war. So we can expect that some themes will be not pretty popular, which is happened also, for instance, in my case with my post. Many people just never got the sense of what I'm talking about, because I talked about the war and the patriarchal society and why, for instance, it is so widespread during the war, these rapes and sexual abuses and violence, especially towards women, because this is an act of power, because this is something which we taught from the childhood, you know. Every time then we play those games, we put this meaning to it, like, you need to go and win the game. You need to show your power. And this is about rapes, of course, because, you know, on this mental level, people did it during the Second World War, and it's still here. It's still, you know, in this culture of the war. So that's why I'm so against of heroization of the wars everywhere, because it is not about that. You can see it or feel it, you know, from outside, but then you are inside the war, you see the blood, you see the pain, you see the destroyed families, destroyed lives, it is not about to be a hero. Like, you know, it can be portrayed in different countries. And of course, we need to resist. We need to protect our country here. But what people think, for instance, in Russia about this special operation, or let's still be honest, that's the war. They think like those soldiers from Russia, they are heroes because they are coming here to protect somebody from Russian speaking, yeah, or something like that. So they also see this rape or rapes like a pretty normal thing because it's so, like, you know, usual and in the culture of the war. So that's why I think that we still feel this lack of visibility and lack of analysis on that issue.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I just wanted to quickly point out that that viral threat on the Russian colonialism that I did, you know, 2 days before the war, is actually was shocking even for me when I was listing one after another examples of Russia invading other countries and colonizing them. Rape was and is, through the centuries, is an integral tool of Russian colonial oppression. And this is something shocking, I think, was for me, for a person who's been trying to mainstream this issue and reporting on this issue for many years. But it also, I think, it shouldn't be so surprising for anyone else once they learn the history of Russian colonial conquest that used and still is using rape as integral tool. So this is something that unfortunately hasn't been covered enough.
I was just going to say that patriarchy, imperialism, and colonialism all go hand in hand and enable behaviors that are, you know, detrimental and oppress people all over the world. And we just need to remember that. And I think, yeah, it's just also, I think Olena was talking about this as well in the thread before, which is that essentially, you know, like prior to the war even happening, you know, I mean, men in general, but Russian men as well, you know, there's not been, Russia's not notorious of gender equality and men's respect for women. I think, you know, domestic violence in Russia is just through the roof, and it's just related to a lot of things in society that have been happening over a very long time. And so I think it's just important to remember that obviously when you're in a position of power and sort of in a war situation, when you're holding a gun and things just hit you in the head, then of course it just heightens these sort of things that have been embedded within culture and society, that, you know, women are less than and Ukrainians are less than, and Ukrainian women are therefore even less than in their minds. So this is why we're seeing what we're seeing happen. I also wanted to ask, I think this is a question we ask everyone, and it's going to be interesting as well to hear your perspective on this. But as Maxim said, Olena is one of the most prominent activists in Ukraine. And of course, you know, you would be the first person to say that not everything in Ukraine was perfect, and probably, you know, isn't perfect. But I think it's just something that we, as people who work within human rights, within the activism sphere, have always known and have always tried, you know, have always worked to make Ukraine better. And thankfully, we've had the necessary tools to be able to do it. But we wanted to ask you, Olena, what does being Ukrainian mean to you? And has that changed somehow during the war and after the war, before the war? Sort of, how do you feel about being Ukrainian?
Well, it's a pretty good question. You know, just before the war, I got the chance to receive my second MA degree in sociology, and one of my works was about the Ukrainian identity. And it is pretty interesting theme to me because, you know, we spend so many hours talking about this rising of nationalism after Euromaidan and all those, you know, right-wing groups and so far and so on. But in general, you know, when it comes to analysis about our society, I would go with the idea that during these 8 years until now, and hopefully after the war, it will be a very interesting, you know, process of forming the Ukrainian identity as a political identity, not based on all those, you know, old-fashioned things about the blood and the nation, you know, but based on values, based on those principles which you are putting in front of you. So in my point of view, I guess that this is pretty interesting process we are going through today of forming this political identity as the Ukrainians. And hopefully it will be also, you know, afterwards it will be also something which will replace this pretty, let's say, limited terminology or terms like this Western values or Eastern values or traditional values, you know,
oh,
or progressive values. Yes, hopefully it in the end it will help us to find something new in this world and to join our efforts, you know, to fight for this, like I would prefer to call it like humanity values.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's absolutely powerful to hear that from every and each Ukrainian we invite all the time. And this is a question we ask them. And the answer is always quite similar. It's always people telling that, you know, this is something that's been already cooking and developing before the genocide, that a lot of people would see their Ukrainian identity mostly as a set of values, as a choice that many arrive to, including myself, for example. But what we're experiencing is basically turbocharging this process, and this is unfortunate circumstances. But this is something that is happening with increasing speed. Alena, I wanted to, you know, ask you something a bit personal, because when I first met you in 2014, and the circumstances were equally, you know, maybe unfortunately less tragic, but still quite tragic, and still you had all the energy and all the enthusiasm of keep fighting and keep speaking out, and that energy has never disappeared in the last 8 years that since I know you. I really want to ask you, even these days, even looking at the genocide that is happening to our country, how are you managing to keep that energy going? How are you managing to just not to fall into despair every day, which is something that many of us are really, really, really struggling. What keeps you going these days?
Oh, that's a pretty good question. I don't think that I have a short answer to that. Of course, I pretty tired, because it seems like you know, more than the months, but it still feels like a one huge long day without any breaks. That's from
so
one
like
hand.
A decade.
Yeah. But from the other hand, I think it is a secret also of why I'm still keep going, because it is something which also give you energy. Each time then somebody send you a message like, thank you so much for your support. Or then, for instance, people sending us photos with those things which we managed to send them. So, this feedback gives you strength, because you just understand that it is needed. And I think that it is a secret, because you can keep going in any circumstances, but you need the support from others. And this is something about community. This is something about mutual support. This is something about sisterhood and brotherhood. Yeah, so of course, not everybody can do that, but we all different. And that's why I valued, I value all the experiences which people have, those who left, those who can't work, who saved their families. That's everybody is equal here.
Yeah, well, we try to make these kind of talks. Of course, we want to inform the listeners about Ukraine and maybe myths about Ukraine or what it means to be Ukrainian. But after all, to be super honest, after all, this is also a therapy session for our Ukrainians, for all of us. I don't know how you, Valeria, but after each talk, I feel a bit better, no matter how shitty or fucked up the day was before. And I hope this space brings the same kind of feeling for other fellow Ukrainians, on top of helping you guys to maybe articulate better the things you want to share with the world in English, which is something that we also do for our fellow Ukrainians.
And also, it's just a way for us to be able to make sure that people are paying attention to Ukrainian voices, because that's crucial in, as Maxim, you say, decolonizing a lot of these conversations. A lot of attention is good, but sometimes it's also can sometimes bring its challenges with it. So I'm just so glad to have Olena and other Ukrainians here sharing their thoughts and views. And I obviously know the answer to this, but I wanted to ask Olena to share with everyone else a little bit about, you said that, you know, Women's March went from working on organizing a march to shifting its focus to helping women in times of war. So what are you guys doing at the moment, and how are you helping women in Ukraine? And maybe at the end, you can also tell us how people in the audience and also people who'll be later listening to our podcast can support Women's March to do what you guys are doing.
Yeah, so what we managed to organize from the first day of the war, I don't know how we managed that, but still, we opened the psychological support in our chat bot in Telegram, and it still works 24/7. And you can imagine that, like, now we have more than 25 psychologists who already joined this network to support different women who are still in this process of crisis, you know, leaving the country, waiting for the support, living in cities which are under heavy bombing in also occupied territories and so far and so on. So yeah, psychological support still works 24/7. And then we organized the shelters in the Western Ukraine just to give space to stay for somebody that's like the permanent staying, and for somebody who wants to go abroad. We also provide support, bringing people to the border, and then we have also partners in different countries who can support further with relocation to different cities, finding the place, and also to support them to find a permanent job. But the huge also amount of work, of course, now is the humanitarian supplies and humanitarian aid. So we already found some instruments how to bring it to Ukraine. I mean, based on the individual request of women. Now we have more than 4,000 of requests in our forum, and we already did 2,000 something. So you can imagine, like, it's almost 24 hours people just working with bringing things, buying things, sorting things, sending things to different cities, to different villages, to different women, communicating with them, because with all of them, first, we have 10-15 minutes of the conversation just to support, just to hear the story, just to, you know, somehow give them this human perspective that this is not just sending things, but also to speak about their lives there and just to know what we can do more, of course. And yeah, I'm so thankful to all those people who came here. Like now I'm based in Lviv in one of the shelters. So we have a team of volunteers, more than 20 people who are coming in different times and trying to support and help. And yes, you can support us by many things, honestly, not only donations. Of course, we ask for donations because we need money to buy the things, to send them to different regions. But if you don't have any possibility to donate, you also can provide any other support. So, for instance, now we have many individuals in different countries who can find those things which are not possible to buy in Ukraine. So, for instance, if you will find a way to do it, we have many lists. We can send it to you and then explain how it can be brought to the Polish side of the border, and we will be able to pick up it.
Yeah, and Olena, can you also mention where people can find more information? I know that I linked information about the shelter inside your organization that runs it to my Twitter profile in the links where people can donate, but maybe there are other platforms that people really should follow and find out how they can help from abroad, especially.
Yeah, like, you know, now we have two hats because we support LGBTQI people providing help, and also the second way is to women. So to support women, you can find all the possible solutions how to make a donation on our social networks. In Instagram, it's Marc Žinok, and also on the Facebook page. We provide there all possible solutions like the LeakPay and also PayPal and also transfer to our bank account. So yeah, you can check there.
Looking ahead, because that's the most, you know, nice thing to do these days. When we win and when this genocide is over, I wanted to ask you, there are so many nasty Western myths about Ukrainian women in general. I mean, it feels like a story from a completely different life, but there, just before the war, we had this scandal with Emily in Paris TV show, you know, caricature portraying of Ukrainian women as a mad in shopping and, you know, sex objects and whatnot shit. But do you hope, if you hope for the future, what kind of Western myths about Ukrainian women must change after this war? How you see the ideal portrayal of Ukrainian women in Western media, but also in general perspective? What kind of myths you want to fucking die forever?
Well, I expect, of course, that this image will change significantly. And I would just go with one very important thing that I expect and I hope that after the war will finish, there will be no place to describe the Ukrainian women as a sexualized object like it were before. Because I hope that so many people in different countries already saw different faces, different portraits of Ukrainian women who are now fighting for independence.
Thank you. That's super important. And I don't know if you have a story to mind, but just for our closing remarks, I know you talked to a lot of women in Ukraine, and I was wondering if there was anything you could share with us, or just a story, or you know, anything from the past couple of months that you've seen or heard that has given you hope about the future for Ukraine and for sort of women in Ukraine moving forward.
Well, I just want to point out on several stories, for instance, of the volunteers here in Lviv who are now helping to supply women with all necessary things that they ask in. So few women, young women, who 8 years ago escaped from the war on the Donbas, their homes were ruined, and they just, you know, moved themselves to the Mariupol. And then 8 years ago, that was another disaster for them. So they just, you know, lose their lives twice, but still they found the forces in themselves to come here and to say to us that they are willing to be a volunteers. They are still willing to support others who are in need.
That's actually amazing. Yeah.
But it reminds me also the conversations, and there's a very viral picture by a Lithuanian artist now on Twitter. I cannot recollect the name. Anyway, but it shows the pictures of four generations of Lithuanian women that suffered from various Russian invasions. And this is something that instantly everybody in the region, including Ukrainians, think of. And in case of Ukraine, there are even, you know, multiple assaults like that in a lifetime for one Ukrainian woman. And this is something that a lot of people still do not understand. And I wish those stories be told more often. So thank you so much, Olena, for joining us. It's been an immense pleasure, as always. Again, I hope the circumstances were just so much different. But your testament to this kick-ass, unwavering, defiant spirit of Ukrainian woman, and I'm forever, you know, in debt to you for your work, what you've been doing for Ukraine, and for communities, and also for Ukrainian women. Thank you so much for spending this time with us and joining Ukrainian Spaces today.
Thank you so much, Olena.
Thank you.
And just to add quickly before we close, I help Women's March with their social media accounts, which is why it's important to say to everyone here, follow Olena, follow Women's March on Twitter and across all of our platforms, as well as Insight, and see the continuous work that Olena and some of our other colleagues are doing and have basically not stopped doing since day one of this, as we just spoke about. And just make sure that, you know, you're elevating voices of brave Ukrainian women and listening to them as well, because we have a unique perspective to bring to the table on this topic. So I just really hope that the world will listen to us.
And for now, thank you so much for spending this hour with us, Olena, Valeria, Slava Ukraini.
Herom Slava, see you next time.